There is a new approach to stake weighted. I give an RPC provider some share of my blocks, and they kind of have priority to submit transactions. Let's say I produce 1,000 blocks per epoch. Then I tell this RPC provider, okay, I can get you, 50% of my blocks, and you have priority. And then, we have like a contract or some kind of deal where I get paid by giving this RPC provider priority.
Scraping Bits is brought to you by the following sponsors. MEV Protocol. Maximize your ETH staking value with MEV ETH. Exclusively on MEV.io. And Composable. Execute any intent on any chain, coming soon to Mantis.app. That's MANTIS.APP. And Fastlane Labs, the only MEV and intent-centric team that has a daily deodorant application rate of over 68%.
GM, everyone. My name is Tagachi, the host of Scraping Bits. And today, I'm with a Solana validator named Simdigit. How's it going, GM?
Hello, Tagachi. Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Glad to have you on. And just for the people that aren't familiar with you, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, so I'm run the validator Simdigit, running it for about a year now and like more than, 2 years on testnet. I'm a very big fan of Solana, the whole ecosystem. So yeah, that's me.
Okay. So you've been a Solana validator for 2 years on testnet, 1 year on mainnet. What were you doing before this? And how did you even get into becoming a validator on Solana?
Yeah, so I come from a very different world. So I'm a chemical engineer, worked many years in the industry, to be honest with you, but I was always interested in crypto, Bitcoin and Ethereum. In fact, I started in Ethereum 2019, running a validator, went to the transition proof of work to proof of stake. But then I just noticed that Solana technology is another level. So I switched from Ethereum to Solana.
Were you running an Ethereum validator at all?
Yeah, I was running an Ethereum validator. The requirements are not that high, right? And the thing is, you need 32 ETH, right? So depending on the market price. But yeah, I was able to run one.
So why did you get into the validator game? And you were doing chemical engineering before and still doing it. How do you manage to juggle these two endeavors? I guess they're like, it's a hobby.
It started as a hobby. So I wanted, I read some articles about Ethereum and then I noticed there were so many, guides on how to run your own validator. And I was looking for a way, to invest my money, So I decided, I put some, I buy 32 ETH and I'll run it.
Okay. Instead of buying shit coins?
I bought some meme coins, shit coins, but that's not.
You just want to get into like the infrastructure. So you wanted to invest your money, but what was the true reason? Or was that really the true reason? You just wanted to invest in something stable, but then you went down the rabbit hole of the validator.
Well, so the whole narrative that fiat money, is going, to be less and less in value in the future. And then crypto, will accrue value, and then you get the rewards of being a validator, right? So I thought it would be a good way to not only depend on market, but also, to have this 32 ETH accruing in value. And running a validator seemed to be a good, because the server cost was not a big deal, and it was like $30 a month for you to have to, to run the validator. So it was not.
Oh, really, that's pretty cheap, actually, $30 a month.
Yeah, like for Ethereum, right?
Okay.
For Solana, it's different. I was always watching the ratio between Ethereum and Solana. And I had in my mind, I'll buy the dip, so when I get the best ratio from Ethereum to Solana, I'll make the switch. And then it was like last year, I stopped the Ethereum validator, withdraw all Ethereum and bought the Solana to get some sub-stake and got started with my validator.
And why exactly did you switch over? Because Ethereum is well and thriving, the whole L2 scene is going on with Aztec and Optimism and all this other stuff, Arbitrum, etc.
Yeah, a guy on Twitter, very active. His name is Balaji Srinivasan, and he made a thread about Solana. So that's what caught my interest about Solana. Yeah, and then going through the documentation, the website, how to set up a validator, and how the blockchain is more performant.
What exactly in that thread was actually so intriguing to switch over to becoming a Solana validator?
Because crypto is supposed to replace, how we transact with money, right? So it was, by that time, was the only blockchain that could match like the number of transactions from Visa, for instance, right? So, you know, that's, you know, I thought, whoa, this technology is different. And you know, that was the main reason, that was the main thing in the thread, you know, was the TPS and the low fee.
Especially with FireDancer with the 1 million TPS. Interesting. So, okay, when you got into becoming a validator, what did you notice were the main bottlenecks and the biggest points to improve on?
Well, I mean, for the guides that were available by the time for Ethereum was way better, way more explicative than Solana guides. And what I saw as a challenge was really, I mean, I didn't deal with Linux or Ubuntu command line a lot. So I had to learn all of that, how to run your own service. And then as time goes on, you have to learn how to have a hot spare, like a backup validator, all this stuff. The technical skills that you need to run a validator in Solana, they're still quite high. I mean, if you just want to invest, you better just take Solana. I would say that would be the best option. Because if you want to run a validator, I mean, you need to go into the technical details and it takes time to learn.
And what did you notice? Because Solana, a big part of it is the spam is a giant bottleneck. So what do you think contributes to that?
Yeah, so since there is no mempool and there is a scheduler already where it's supposed to pick the transactions that have the highest fees and prioritize those transactions, but it doesn't work exactly as expected. It has like 4 threads and there's some locking of accounts. And, you know, you end up some people doing, you know, transactions in the chain. They notice that another alternative to paying high fees is just send a huge amount of transactions to the leaders because there is a fixed lead schedule, right, for the validators, or to the preview validators because they know the transactions will be forward. So they end up repeating lots and lots of transactions because they know, right, that this strategy in the end, it pays off. I mean, if you send 20 and you get one through, if you're paying very low fees, it might make sense instead of just sending one transaction at a high fee. Because the problem is happening right now with the scheduler is that even some transactions with high fees, sometimes they're not prioritized. So I guess the game's going to change with the new scheduler. I don't know how much is going to change, but I hope it will change for the better. And then it will make more sense to send less transactions and get your prioritization by paying the right fees, right?
The 1.18.
The 1.18, yes. Right. So that's what's happening. And again, in terms of, you know, the skills, you know, right now what you have to do is you need to track, you know, who is doing the quick connections to your validator and then try to sift which ones you want to keep, which ones you want to firewall, right? And that's also not something like, I don't know, you have like 2,000 something validators. My guess is that not everyone has the knowledge to do that.
Right. So what do you mean by closing down all these quick connections? What is happening here and what should people actually be doing?
It's because, you know, the way to get your transactions into the blockchain is to either send to an RPC server, right? And then this RPC server will forward the transactions to the leaders, or you could use Solana Gossip, and from Solana Gossip, you have the list of the validators and their IP addresses and their TPU ports, you know. So by knowing that, you can, you know, basically running a bot, you can send transactions directly to each validator, you know, just following the schedule. And there is not really a defense for that right now. The only way to stop it would be if someone is spamming. You should, you know, firewall them.
But what if they keep changing their IP though?
Yeah, you see, so that's the challenge, you know. So that's yeah. I guess no, that's really what's happening. It's like anyone can submit transactions. On one hand, it's very democratic, but it can be abused as well, right?
Of course, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So if you were to try and solve this, what kind of things would you do? I guess first glance, having been in this for a year or two.
That's a good question. I was really thinking about it. I'm really understanding the repo right now, the Agave and so on. But one thing that could be done, in my opinion, would be to, we have the gossip, right? Mechanisms. Right. The validators, they send messages to others, right? Via gossip of the bad actors. And then you say, well, this is happening to me, you know, be aware. And then, you know, if other validators confirm that IP is spamming, then put them in a quarantine, something like that. But always letting your fellow validators know what's happening using the gossip message. I think that's a good way. It could work. Maybe it could be developed as a separate service on top of the Agave repo. You have like a separate service just doing that. Just sending gossip messages of the good behaving transaction meter, the good ones that are not behaving well and whatever.
Wouldn't that be a good way to sort them out though? Like what Flashbots does with reputation with the bundles. Maybe you could do the same thing. I guess if you have that many transactions, if you just look for the signers, maybe you could keep a record of them, but the latency factor would come into play and maybe it's not feasible.
Yeah. But that, you know, there's this mechanism already, you know, so that's the way you have to talk to others. And there's a good YouTube video explaining how gossip works.
Yeah. Actually, he's coming on the podcast later on.
Oh, nice. Yeah, because the validators that have the highest stake, they're more trusted. So their message, they have higher trust, you know. So if you're trying to spam the network, like you start as a small validator, like, I don't know, 5,000 SOL, you are the spammer, right? You don't have a huge trust from the quorum because you have just a low stake. It means that if you want to spend the network, then you need like to be a high staker validator or something like that, you know?
So, What's the benefit actually being a small validator though?
So nowadays, I mean, if you're really small validator, like what I mentioned, like 5K, unless if it's your own, so that's kind of a break even, you know, in terms of what you get of rewards and what you spend. That you would be, there's some calculators out there. I mean, it's just a general estimate, right? But then you're consuming all your rewards to pay for the operation.
Right. Yeah. It's
really not, you know, contributing to the network, but you're not making money, right? Most of the validators right now that are in the range of 100K to 100K, they're reasonably profitable right now because new things were introduced. And, you know, if you look at the ecosystem like 1 year ago, but the only way to, you know, get to make any money would be from rewards. Because the rewards are paid based on the credits that you make.
All the credits.
So credits are the way that you are rewarded by voting on the correct forks of the chain, right? So if you are on the correct fork that the majority agrees on, you get credits, right?
How do you actually... So it's like a two different lanes. It's like the voting and then the actual block building, right? With all the transactions, is that correct?
So when you're voting on a slot, but you're actually voting on the fork, right? Because you're the last slot of that fork and say, well, I'll keep voting here, right? And there's some lockouts. I mean, you cannot just basically, you know, change from one fork to another. There's some limitations, some lockouts. I mean, you have to go into the documentation for that. So if you're a good voter, you get more credits. Then you get higher rewards per epoch. And then you can pay more rewards to your stakers. Yeah, so my point is that, you know, until last year, maybe the only way to make money for medium-sized validators, like, you know, 100K, 200K. But now with MEV from Jito, then you can make some more. And also the fees are quite higher compared to 3 months ago, to be honest with you. So now you got these three sources of revenue, which is the MEV and voting fees. It's better for the validators to be,
Interesting. So walk me through this entire voting process. When, you know, someone, walk me through the entire pipeline. Like, how does voting actually work on Solana?
How does voting actually work? So when the leader produces a block, right? So the transaction process unit. So when the leader produces a block, once it's done with that block, it will broadcast the block to the other validators. And the other validators, they will vote. So usually, you know, you cannot vote on the same block, all right? So because, you know, you are at least one block later, and then it's broadcasted. So there is a way to broadcast sending directly to T-Port, I guess. And it also broadcasts it by, you know, through gossip. But the way it works, my understanding of Rust and what I see in the repo so far is that you don't really care about the votes of others. You just care about, you know, you are on a fork and then you validate the transactions and the signatures. They're all fair. And then you vote, yes, I'll validate this block, you know. So that's when you validate, right? So you vote for it.
How do you actually determine So obviously there's some kind of strategy here. It's determining which fork is going to actually continue the Solana blockchain, right? So what kind of things should you look for if you're going to vote on a fork? So there should be some heuristics, right? Or is it really just random guessing?
There's no random guessing. But Solana has many forks, right? I mean, you were going to vote on the longest fork, right? If previous blocks have been confirmed, right? So I guess that's all considered when the validator votes. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm a validator myself. I run a rep room from Agave, but that's really something I'm interested in going deeper in some details of how it works.
Right. Yeah, because it seems like if that's like the main thing, as you're saying, if that's how you get APY and that's like the biggest contributor for someone to delegate, like, oh, I have better APY than you because my voting mechanism is better. And then there must be some competitive edge that you can get in there, right? And that would have to take into account, you know, the last forks, right? And then how is this block being built? And what happened? What are each of these forks, though? Is everyone building like their own fork and you're just voting on whose fork is best? What is happening here?
Yeah, so the forks will happen naturally because, you know, we have a leader schedule, right? So let's say I'm about to be the leader, but, you know, in my data center, for some reason, the network is not as performant as it should be, or my server is doing something else and my CPU was high writing to the disk or whatever. And then I kind of miss the chance of building a block, right? Then I'll miss that block, right? So let's say I skipped the last two blocks of my four blocks. The next leader, he will need to build his block, not based on mine because I skipped, right? So you have to build... Right. On the blocks of the previous validator, so to speak, you know, so this will create a fork, right? And I might end on a different fork than this other validator, or maybe I was able to broadcast my block to the validators that are close to me, maybe if I'm on the same data center, or due to latency some validators saw because we are clusterized. The validators are on the other side of the world, they didn't see it. So you might end up creating forks for this reason.
If you're the validator and you're creating this fork, who else is voting on the one that you're validating though? Isn't it just you?
Maybe in the end it will be just me and then you'll be dropped, you know, because the fork that wins is the fork that has the most votes, right? So I might be...
Oh, so is it like it must be a multi-slot thing then, right? Because if I'm the one actually creating the block, I should be able to get rid of your votes or at least manipulate it in some way to the point where I can have my own votes and I just win by default because I'm the one creating the block. And if your votes are not getting included, then I just win, right? Like, and then down the road, since I created that slot and I validated it, for someone else to do a different chain, they would have to go from the block before and skip mine and then continue going.
If it's their time to build the block and they haven't seen my blocks, they'll build on the previous. So let's say we're on block 100, right? And I have like 101, 2, 3, 4, right? And I skip all of them. So then the next leader will not, so they will not build on, instead he'll build on block. And I might not see it. Yeah, let's think about it. And I might not see it. And I will keep building my own. No, sorry, not building because you have four blocks. I might vote on my own delayed blocks. That might end up happening. But at some point, you know, the code will see that, you know, my fork is not the strongest one and we'll drop this fork and go back voting on the highest fork, you know. So that's sort of high level how it works. I mean, really, you know, it's questions really interesting.
Because let's say I do a transfer in my block and I give all my money to someone else. And then we no longer continue with this fork, right?
But it needs to be confirmed, right? I mean, you need like some number of blocks built on top of that to be confirmed. Something like 20, 30 blocks need to be built on top of that block for that transaction to be confirmed, right? So,
right.
Let's say it's 20. So it's 20 times 4, 0.4 seconds. So you get like 16 seconds.
Right. So it's not actually confirmed until all these other validators have built these blocks and it then creates a chain of like 20 blocks. And then it's confirmed, even if you just put it into the block now, which is now in the fork. But it doesn't mean that the fork can't change later on. And then
But don't call me on these 20 blocks, but something on
interesting. And would you say like this is like a completely different game to the MEV game where people are doing, you know, they're like ordering blocks just like on Ethereum as a block builder on voting. It's actually, it's a way different because you get the rewards, right?
Yes, that's the MEV from the perspective of validator, right? So from the perspective of a validator, I know that people are making transactions using the chain. And I know there are searches out there. They're looking for opportunities, right? They're looking for arbitrage. They're looking for front running, back running. And I'm not an expert on this, but I know that they're looking to make some money based on the transactions they're seeing that are taking place in the blockchain, right? So you have Jiro that came out and would like to provide searchers a way to get visibility of what's going on the chain. So if you guys run this modified version of the validators, the Jito Solana validator, you can get a tip when the searchers submit bundles. And bundles are a group of transactions, right? Where they look for, you know, this arbitrage, front running, back running, sandwich opportunities, and they are atomic. So either they work or they don't. But if they work, the searchers, they include a tip, right? So they include this tip there. And then me as a validator, if I was the one producing that block, I'll get the tip myself, right? So that's from the perspective of the validator. That's what we see. What the searchers are really doing, even the code that they use, I mean, they tend to keep it proprietary, right? They don't, you know, they share some strategies on, if you go to Jito Discord, but not really, you know, the technical details and how these bots are implemented. I mean, you have to dig and try on your own, right? So I see these guys, they invest heavily on these bots. They invest quite heavy.
Seems like the voting is like built-in MEV for validators, but to do both would be quite difficult and quite complex. Who do you actually see that's doing this quite well? Because there must be some kind of metrics that you can see people dominating the voting scene, or maybe people are mimicking other people's votes, like seeing, oh, I vote for this fork, and then I'm going to copy your vote. Maybe like this fork is better in the long run.
I see. Okay, so you're talking about like following, right? Yeah, I can see that. I mean, now we're not talking about MEV, right? If you're talking about voting, it would be... I mean, I could watch a validator that votes better than others, and I could modify the code. Yes, I think that's possible. I could modify the vote and watch how this one is voting and kind of, you know, vote on the same blocks that this one is voting. I guess it's possible, but that will add some latency, right? Because I always need to wait until I get information about this validator to be able to vote. And now with the TVC, timely vote credits, if you delay your votes, you get less credits. So this
So you got to be fast with this.
So this following strategy, if you try to do that, you got to be good at it because you need to be, you know, I mean, if you add like one block latency, maybe it's too good. But if you add like 2-3 blocks latency, which will be
right. Like, so the credits are like linear to how fast you are and actually casting your vote.
They will be. Nowadays, it's been voted, in fact. I mean, there's some governance going on. So people are, but I mean, the majority voted for the implementation of TVC. But right now, what happens is that you still get, I mean, if I delay all my votes and I just look at major forks, I can vote in all of them and still get the credits. And that's pretty unfair.
You can vote in all of them.
Yeah, you can vote on all that were chosen, and then you'll be like 100% perfect. You can choose all the forks.
So there's no... I thought there was a disadvantage to actually switching your vote to a different fork. You get slashed or something.
There is no slashing, no. I mean,
right now, maybe
you are locked out and not able to vote. That's correct. I'm not sure if you get slashed. That's a good question. Okay. I don't think you do.
So then why doesn't everyone just vote on everything?
Well, I mean, there's social slashing, so to speak, right? So yeah, that's a hard conversation in Discord. I mean, who are the, you know, who modified the validators and who, and because you end up not contributing to consensus if you do that. So
right.
If you play your votes, you know, a lot just to be able to get the credits, that's what is unfair about the current state is you even provide a higher APY to your stakes, but you're not really contributing to consensus. So that's the proposal. You have TVC, proposal from Shinobi, and it's being being the cook by Anza folks for a while now. And I guess, don't call me on that, but I guess we'll be live on 118 as well. And then you kind of have some grace period, like let's say 2-3 blocks, you're still good, you still get the full credits. But if you delay your votes, you know, longer than that, then you have a decrease on the credits. So in the end, you get lower APY.
Right. So the credits are basically like your rewards for voting correctly.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then, okay, interesting. Is there any advantage for holding credits? Do you hold them and redeem them, or is it just you just get rewards? And
I just get rewards. So my understanding is that every beginning, so that's a program that is runs on chain, right? So in the beginning, the first slots of the epoch, it goes through the credits, and then you get the rewards on your vote account. Because we have a valid, you know, we have a identity account and we have a vote account. So every starting of the epoch, you and your stakers, in fact, so both. So the stakers, they get the rewards based on the credits that you
interesting. Okay.
Previous epoch, and you get your share of that based on your commission.
Curious, how do you actually test? Because you could, okay, let's say you modify your voting mechanism so you can always basically win or do the best kind of voting you can possibly. How do you actually test voting and testing the validator in general, whatever you modify, how do you actually test it?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot that goes into it and you have to like shut it down, turn it back up, you know, read from the ledger each time, make some mock transactions or just read live transactions, right?
I mean, there's so fast ways to do that. I mean, there's the testnet validator, but that's a single one. So
where you it's run your validator. How do you actually test like voting, like a new voting mechanism that you created to win?
I bet there are folks doing that on testnet, you know, like testing mods. And we see some crazy stuff sometimes, you know, things happening in testnet, on devnet, and probably are folks, you know, testing some modifications of the code. That's not the only one that I would say they do, but voting is really appealing to work on because of the credit system, and then you get higher APY, right? So that's why people focus on this one first.
Yeah. So the way you're testing right now is through just test validator? It's not actually your own custom environment?
I don't have if I would do that, I would test on that first because it's cheap to test that and get it solved and test that on testnet as well. But you know, it's hard to track. I mean, I'll actually track the behavior of your validator. So you need to look on chain and you have to write additional code to be able to, you know, to track this performance.
I feel like if you wanted to do it, you could just spin up like your own validator. That's a default one or one of each one, like the Agave. I think I butcher that every single time. You could do like the Jitter one, spin up that one, or just look at the algorithms for how they vote. And then you could like modify your own one, build your own test environment. Obviously, this is a giant lift, but build your own test environment and then just see how yours interacts with these other algos. Because that's essentially what you're doing. You're just trying to beat other people's algos. So if you have all the public ones, obviously there's modified ones, but it's my naive answer.
The nice thing is, but I question myself, you know, isn't it supposed to, you know, the code to be, you know, kind of close to what we need in terms of consensus, you know? So if you're modifying the consensus algorithm, why is that? You know, is there a you know, they're missing something or you're playing, you know, out of the rules, you know? So that's really, you know, and I don't know the code that well to tell you, but could be that, or, you know, there are opportunities for improvement. And some folks, they found it and they still play fair game, right? By changing the voting mechanism, but it's always, you know, this like moral question. Am I just improving the code or I'm not playing by the rules anymore, you know? So,
right.
Yeah.
And what happens if you don't actually play by the rules?
I mean, it's more social thing, right? Because if you're not playing by the rules, but you're offering a higher APY and the users don't know about it, they'll just go for the higher APY, right? But if the users are the stakers, right? If they see what's going on Discord, on Twitter, they might want to choose other validators that contribute to the ecosystem long-term, right? So, yeah, it's kind of short-term versus long-term gains, you know?
How would they discover that something else is going wrong, even maybe it's not wrong. You're playing by the rules. The rules are just badly defined. Or people aren't just identifying that you're breaking the rules. And if that's so, how do they find out?
Yeah, but for instance, we'll see. My guess is that we have around 20, 30 modified validators on the voting mechanism. But with TVC, it will be, the modifications, they need to become more clever in the modifications, And so it won't be a huge difference on the APY anymore, when we implement TVCs. The incentives, to do this type of modification will be much lower. So I guess people right. stick with the Agave consensus in the end, and that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a nice thing to do up to now for the past, 2-3 years. But the once TVC is implemented, my guess is that, it won't pay off. It won't be worth the effort.
Right. Yeah. So the way you become the most profitable validator is really just voting, your voting strategy.
Your voting strategy, or if you are somehow able to attract people to pay better fees when they submit to your...
You do that.
Wow. That's another hot topic. So there is a new approach to stake-weighted QoS. Yeah. And that's basically, I give an RPC provider some share of my blocks, and they kind of have priority to submit transactions. So my understanding is like, all right, let's say I produce 1,000 blocks per epoch. And then I tell this RPC provider, okay, I can get you, 50% of my blocks, and you have priority. And then, we have like a contract or some kind of deal where I get paid by giving this RPC provider priority. That's my understanding so far. I see some folks playing with that, but that sounds, quite reasonable. I haven't implemented myself yet.
So what do you think is actually the biggest leverage you can have as a validator? Because it seems like on Ethereum, the wallets have the biggest leverage, the people that send the transactions. But on validators, it just seems if you have the correct algo to be everyone else.
So the heaviest lift to run validator in Solana versus Ethereum?
Yeah, like a wallet on Ethereum is just like such power, like the biggest leverage because you control the order flow. But on Solana, it seems like as the validator.
We have many levers. The levers you have are, you can play with your commission. You can play with your MEV commission from Giro. And you can play with LLCs, right? So talking about economics, right? So if you want to be more attractive, for instance, one way is to go down to 0% commission. So, but now everyone's doing that. All right, cool. Now what I'm going to do? Oh, I will reduce my MEV commission, for instance. Okay, so a lot of other folks are doing that as well. The other thing that you could have is launch your own LST because liquid stake token, right?
What is LS? Okay, so what is this and what are the benefits of it?
So we have stake pools. I guess you might be familiar with Marinade and Jito and Blaze Stake, right? And the stake pools, they have the pool and they share across a certain number of validators, let's say validators, all right? But there is now a possibility to have a single stake pool where you create a liquid stake token, right? And you can attach it to a single validator. So I see already many validators doing that. So you create your LST, and then you can provide a higher APY because you can provide extra revenue to the stakers who bought your LST by adding some additional revenue to the pool, right? So you are not only paying the regular APY of your validator, but you can add on top of that, like if you're getting some voting fees, you can say, oh, I'm going to share with people that have my LST, I'm going to share 10% of my voting fees, something like that. And then when you do that, you boost your APY. Or some people do like pay, they have some paybacks, it's like they pay Solana in Solana every epoch based on the stake that you have to the validator. So there's some other strategies, but in the end, providing higher APY will convince the stakers to add more stake to your validator. That's the game being played right now.
Yeah, it seems like whoever has the most stake or who can ever like basically convince others to give them stake or delegation, I think, is the name of the game right now. What do you think it's going to evolve into over the next coming months, if not year?
Yeah, so one thing that concerns me is we see some big validators, like more than 10 million SOL stake. And, you know, if they keep concentrating like that, so let's say, you know, one big validator goes down, you increase the skip rate of the whole cluster. And I mean, you shouldn't reach 30, like one third, because that's dangerous. So if you have like someone that has like, if you're already on a skip rate of 10, let's say, and then this huge validator goes down and you have another 10%, then you now are at the level of 20% skip rate, you know, so that's kind of, you know, start becoming dangerous. So I don't know. I don't see that on Discord, like past discussions, like a roof, you know, like a high limit, how can I say it? A threshold to the amount of stake that the validator should have. Because it can become, it's not really, you know, that people should stay. I mean, if this validator is providing, you know, good APY and so on, but at some point you just say, well, we shouldn't allow, you know, someone to have more than 10% of the whole pie or
well, whatever. If that was a thing, like they would just spin up multiple validators and go up to the threshold.
And that's good in terms of the skip rate, because the most common issue is a hardware failure, a validator going down for any issue, you know, so that's fine if they split in the end. And you see already some, you know, they have 1, 2, 3 validators. Yeah. It's more for the health of the cluster, you know?
I mean, yeah, it's still centralization at the end of the day, except it's just healthier centralization.
It's just that, you know, you reduce the likelihood that the whole network will go down if you have, like, you know, 2 big ones in the same data center. And if that...
Yeah, and that data center just shuts.
Yeah.
Interesting.
In the end, it's really for hardware failures and DevOps issues, all right? Because if it's some government announcement and things like that, or even a data center saying that they're going to not accept crypto anymore, you always have time to move, right? So that's not really a big problem, because moving your validator to another data center is basically moving the keys. And so it's no big deal.
Yeah. So with the current validators that are standard, like the Jitter, Anza, and also just like the normal Solana Labs one, what are the differentiators between them all? And how do you rank them all in like best to worst, most innovative? What's unique about each of them?
Yeah, so Solana Labs, Anza, and Jito, right? So in the end, you might say that we have two. So I run the Jito validator. I see it basically has the same features as the Anza validator, plus the possibility of earning MEV rewards. So technically, I don't see a big difference, but I'm not able to check all the, you know, all the chains and all the brands. And
right.
So basically, I trust, you know, if Anza launched, you know, 1.18.1 and I have Jito 1.18.1, I assume that they perform the same, you know, I assume that, but that could be some chains that Jito has introduced that might, you know, cause, you know, unknown problems or whatever. But, you know, for instance, in my case, since I get stake from the Solana Foundation, right?
Right.
That means that when they require us to upgrade versions, we should do it. You know, I mean, because they put requirements on minimum and maximum versions. And you end up, you know, it's kind of, you have usually like a couple of days to do it. So you're not really able to check all the code, you know, giving, you know, all the changes that happen and from one version to another. So you end up upgrading, you know, basically trusting what Anza did or what Jito Labs did. You know, that's the way I operate. I don't know if other folks are able to check.
With the Jito validator, the one thing I think of immediately is, how does it deal with the conflicting bundles of transactions versus standalone transactions? Is there a priority? It must be a priority fee of validators putting at the top. How does it all work like that?
So the searches are submitting the bundles, right?
And you have to order the bundle.
A block engine. So my assumption is that in the block, the Jito block engine, they do that prioritization. And that's the whole game, right? I mean, the highest fees got the transactions through, right? So we get... The thing is that the validator is connected to Jito block engine. And then you get the bundles from the Jito block engine already in priority. Yeah.
Do you know how exactly it works?
I don't think the validator, I'd be wrong, man, but I don't think it's choosing, you know, between one bundle or the other. I think the order is defined, prior to that.
Yeah, as if it like, okay, what if there's two bundles I'm assuming they already do the simulation before they send it off, but I'm not sure if there's two bundles that are competing for each other, which one gets, they both get sent to the validator, and the validator has to choose. I assume there's no memory of, okay, this bundle will conflict with another one. It's just, does this pass? Yes or no?
Yeah, it could be, because since we're running modified code in the validator, maybe the choice is being done at the validator level. That's a good question. I'm really sure about this one.
What do you see the future of Solana validators going, and just Solana, maybe in general, validators specifically, and also MEV on Solana?
Yeah, so what you see current state are validators. I mean, you see the exchange running their own validators, so they're whales, right? You see some whales running validators because of the initial token distribution back in, I don't know, 5 years ago. And then you see the other validators that entered the ecosystem. Many of them depend on Solana Foundation to be profitable, but not all of them. You know, there are other, you know, independent validators as well. So one thing that is good for the ecosystem definitely are stake pools like Marinade and Jito. They're very beneficial. And I think you as a staker, if you think about helping the ecosystem as a whole, you know, buying tokens from stake pools, they have their own strategies to choose who to distribute the stakes. And they're pretty fair, you know, ways. What they're doing, at least my evaluation, Blaze Stake, Jito, and Marinade, the criteria they use to distribute, it seems pretty fair to me. So a good way to support the ecosystem and new validators joining the system is staking with these stake pools. All right. What I see happening in the future is, you know, some folks say that we could go up to 10,000 validators, but we are seeing, you know, some movements of concentration. So I don't know, we have like 2,000. If we keep the 2,000 that we have, I'll be, you know, honestly, I'll be very happy if we are able to keep it like that, you know, because for me, it's already very well decentralized. You see, you see that, you know, you can notice in Discord and in the calls from the validators. It's, I wouldn't say it's 2,000 different operators, of course not, but it's very diverse. It's very diverse, you know.
Okay.
So it's you know, I have a feeling that it's quite well decentralized, and I mean, keeping it that way at least. You know, make sure that we keep this 2,000 something at least, you know. That's already, you know, that would be already very, very beneficial to, yeah.
And I guess if, like, you say there's, like, social slashing, if some of the validator did something bad and people identified it, what is the process of them actually getting shut down, or, like, the community just being, like, don't censor this guy anymore?
Yeah, so the stake pools, they have this, in fact, they evaluate the behavior. So for this voting, this unfair voting, for instance, some have been blacklisted.
Oh, so like just no more sending via gossip.
Yeah, so you don't get stake from this stake pool if you do this type.
Gotcha.
And that's basically a human decision. It's not really on chain or whatever. Yeah, so that's one way of social slashing, so to speak. Even Solana Foundation could also decide not to, you know, put stake, or even people could go far and post on social media and, yeah. We see some things happening in that regard. Yeah, on Discord. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very excited to see the Solana ecosystem grow. It's a very exciting time right now. It seems like Ethereum pre-flashbots. Very exciting times back in the Ethereum day, if you were there. But yeah, it's a very interesting ecosystem to get your head around and explore. I'm hoping to see some cool stuff happen in the future, especially with you. I'm waiting for you to become number one validator.
So my objective right now, I run a validator in South America. I'm from Brazil. I would like, you know, to bring it, you know, make people understand more about Solana. And so, you know, I'm about to launch my own LLC as well. So that's, you know, that's my intent, you know, is really to develop content for locals there and attract stake from the region. So guys, if you're, you know, in Brazil, think about, you know, staking with Simpdigit. Not only in Brazil overall, but, you know, my folks will be there because
interesting. Hell yeah, that's what we like to hear. I'm actually using crypto for IRL stuff, but man, Simpdigit, it's been a pleasure talking to you, finally getting to hear about the validator side of things. It's very hard to find people willing to come on to talk about their stuff. and helping others understand the ecosystem and whatnot. So super appreciate your time, friend.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, you know, to show up on the podcast.
Of course. And anyone looking to learn more about him, just go to Twitter and type up SimDigit and you can go find all his shit there. Otherwise, friends.
Just follow me on Twitter.
Otherwise, GNGN.